south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, let's get to our backlog of cool emails now. First, we have an email from someone who calls himself Someone, S-U-M-W-N. I like that. Says, dear Johnny, faithful listener here, but really, I'm totally ignorant on how to operate with money down in South and Central America. That's cash money. Should one carry cash? What popular U.S. banks have ATMs there? Thanks for the great info. Someone. He spells it the Chinese way, like some gum and wonton. That's S-U-M-W-O-N. So, anyway, that might sound like a simple question, but things do change, especially here in Latin America. Now, it's not necessarily getting more difficult to use cash. People love cash down here. That's a big change, huh? But banks have a limit on the amount of cash they'll accept due to the first world so-called money laundering laws and that FATCA crap. All that first world stuff's been shoved down Latin bankers' throats, too. Anyway, Latin American banks will change U.S. dollars into the local funny money for you. That is, if you've got an account with that bank. Now, that really presents a problem for so many gringos who don't have bank accounts in Latin countries. Now, there are some U.S. branch banks down here, especially on the gringo tourist trail. There are even a few big disgusting ones like Citibank and Scotiabank in many Latin countries, even in the small towns. So, if you have an account in one of those banks up in the States or Canada, surely you'll walk in and show them your ID card and give them your bank account number, and you'll be able to change money easily. Now, here's what a lot of longtime expats do. They take, let's say, $800 U.S. cash, they go to their local Latin bank, they deposit it in the account using a deposit slip, then they write out a withdrawal slip right after that while still standing at the window, or you can do it in a drive-through bank too. Then at that moment or slightly after, you withdraw that $800 in the local funny money. I know it's stupid and involves extra work, but that's the way it's done down here. The fact is, you can't just go up to a bank window, hand them $500 or $800 and say, give me this in the local funny money. It doesn't work that way. It used to be that easy before FATCA, but now you have to have your own account to do that. Again, you go into the bank, you deposit your dollars in your local funny money account, then you get a withdrawal slip and withdraw the local funny money. You do all that while you're standing there. Yes, it takes some time, but it gets done. And remember, your bank account's in both dollars and local funny money. Anyway, as far as ATM machines, they're everywhere down here. But you'll rarely find one with an American bank's name on it or an American bank logo. Though, you will see ATM machines with all kinds of Latin bank names on them. That said, for us, it doesn't matter. Any ATM machine will accept your credit card, and all will let you withdraw the local currency, usually around $200 to $300 worth a day. And many will allow you to take dollars out, too, to the tune of about $200 to $300 a day. Now, usually, when you go to one of these ATM machines and you stick your card in there, it'll ask you if you want it in English or Spanish. Yes, many ATMs are now 100% bilingual. Then, for example, if you're going to pull out $200 in the local funny money, as you go through the process, a question will inevitably pop up on the screen that says, press yes if you agree to a $1 or $2 charge for this transaction. Which is not a very good deal if you're pulling out, let's say, just $20 or even $50. Now, even for $50, if you're charged $2, that's 4% of the total transaction. Kind of a ripoff. Which is why you should always pull out the maximum if you're going to go to an ATM machine. So if you can get $300 out and they charge you $2, then that's less than 1% on the transaction. Pretty good deal, huh? Now, for all of you really smart gringos out there who have Schwab credit cards and bank accounts up north, you'll find that even if you're charged $1 or $2 for the transaction at the ATM machine, Schwab will eventually reimburse all your ATM fees. That's part of their deal. Aside from that, here's something else I recommend. Depending how long you're coming down for, or even if you're living down here and just traveling, I say you take $1,000 to even $3,000 US, and I'm talking about pristine $100 bills that have no marks or tears or hairline scratches, no smudges or ink marks, and definitely no penis noses drawn on Andy Jackson. Yeah, I know, they'll accept that stuff in Cleveland, but not down here. Then you buy yourself a nice heavy-duty zipper belt, which you can get on the internet. Now, of course, I'm talking about a belt that holds up your pants. Note, there are some very crappy zipper belts on the internet. Don't buy one of those cheap, flimsy nylon ones, because if you pack $200 or $300 in there, there's always an obvious, unusual lump in it. Nope, not good. You know how when snakes swallow a rat, it works its way down the snake in an obvious lump until it's excreted as a politician? Well, that's what those nylon zipper belts look like when they're loaded with money. Minus the politician bit, of course. The point is, it can never look like a zipper belt. It's got to be nice and wide and normal looking. So, get a real leather belt. And I know some of you out there are against leather and animal products, but believe me, in the rarefied world of zipper belts, nylon and plastic just don't cut it. So anyway, if you can, you get a nice tooled leather zipper belt. What's it going to cost you? I don't know, $25, $30 on the internet. By the way, the best ones I've ever seen in my life are in that little town of Panachel in Guatemala in the Lake Atitlan district. Yep, that's where I get mine. Beautiful hand-tooled leather, many styles, with a very strong yet discreet heavy zipper. Now, as for me, when I'm traveling or out anywhere, I'm always wearing a zipper belt. Often when I'm traveling and there's not a secure safe in the room, and I'm talking about a secure room safe. There are room safes and there are room safes. If you travel a lot, you know what I mean. Anyway, when there's not a secure room safe, I'll often roll my zipper belt into a tight coil and stick it under an adjacent pillow or between the two mattresses. So if you have a good money belt, you could easily get $1,000 to $3,000 into it, and no one will be the wiser. And if you don't think it's possible, here's how to do it. You take, let's say, five, that's about the maximum, new or almost new, clean $100 bills, stack them on each other and lay them flat on a tabletop, then make two equal folds lengthwise, and you'll end up with a long, narrow stack of bills about an inch wide. Then you take the flat part of a stiff pen and you start ironing the thing flat. And you'll see in about 20 seconds how really plastered flat you can make them. So anyway, let's say you're going to put $2,000 in your zipper belt. You do that little procedure with five stacked bills four times. Then you open your zipper all the way and start layering them in. You overlap each little stack of five a bit so that when you open and close your zipper, you don't snag them. At first, you will snag a few, but you'll get the hang of it. Now, suppose you've been on a sweaty Amazon safari down in Peru doing ayahuasca and hanging with the shamans. And after 3 months of altered consciousness, you find your way out of the jungle and you realize, wow, I haven't checked my zipper belt lately. Chances are, you'll find that after an ordeal like that, those bills will be so plastered and pressed, it'll be hard to separate them. Never fear, they may be dank and stanky, but you'll tease them apart. Now, do note that if you try to cash in one of those $100 bills, you'll probably never be able to do it at little stores and supermarkets and such. You'll have to go and do it at a bank. Or at one of those money-changing booths, but I almost never recommend going there because they really stick you, sometimes for up to 20%. The ones at the airports are the worst. Yet they do try to suck you in with so-called special deals. In fact, some of them will give you the precise bank rate, so you think you're getting a great deal. But when you sign the paperwork, they hit you with a big hidden fee. Beware of the fine print. To me, those places are only for dire emergencies when you haven't got any of the local funny money. Like, for example, when you arrive at an airport at 11:30 at night and you have no local funny money to get a taxi or, if you're starving, to get something to eat. But do note, even if your taxi driver does take dollars, he's never going to have change for 100. Oh, another thing, with those rip-off cambio booths at the airport, they will take slightly ripped and marked up U.S. dollars, if that's any consolation. Oh, and by the way, the only other places in Latin America where they will accept ripped or disfigured U.S. money, or Andy Jackson with a penis nose, is in those countries that use the U.S. dollar, like Panama, El Salvador, and Ecuador. There, just like in the U.S., dead presidents in any condition are gladly accepted. But in the other 17 Latin American countries, forget about it. So then you might ask, why carry $100 bills, even if they're in good condition, when no one has change? Well, you should look at your zipper belt cash stash as only a reserve in case of emergency. I mean, let's face it, like we started out saying, you can always go to the ATMs. But note, not only should you carry a money belt reserve, you should have a few $100 in nice new U.S. $20 bills too. But not in your money belt. Way too bulky. You have those laying nice and flat in your passport-sized money, passport, and credit card pouch. Now, that pouch will have a little loop on it that slips securely through your belt. Once you've slipped that little loop through the front of your belt, you tuck the pouch in the front side of your pants. Preferably, disgusting as this might sound, in the crotch area, because you know, this is Latin America, and if you're confronted with a crook or a thief, and hopefully you're listening to the show to pick up on some tips that'll help you avoid that. Anyway, if you're ever caught in a bad situation and you get the pat down, the last place a Latin thief or no good Nick will pat you down is over your crotch. And of course, we're talking about guys here. And as far as gringa and tourist women getting robbed here in Latin America, most of the times thieves don't pat down women at all. They just take the fanny pack, the purse, the backpack, and of course, the iPhone. So anyway, you're carrying a few $100 worth of crisp $20 bills, and those you'll find are very negotiable for local funny money. In fact, you'll be surprised how many retailers and storekeepers will accept U.S. funny money of that denomination, even though everything in the place is marked and labeled in the local funny money. All you have to do is pull out a 20 and say, "Acepta dólares?" Which means, do you accept dollars? And if they say yes, you say, "¿Cuál es el tipo de cambio?" Which means, what exchange rate you're going to give me? And believe it or not, when you're off the gringo tourist trail, little shops like that will almost always give you the real bank rate. However, when on the tourist trail, they'll stick you for 5 or 10%. Okay, that's it. How about another email? "Hi, Johnny. Bob here. Love your podcast. It's just me and my dog. Just wondering, what country would be good for an old guy that's tired of the U.S. BS, but isn't rich? Maybe 15K in the bank. Ideally, a cool temperature would be great since my dog can't take to the heat too well. She can handle about 70 degrees or cooler easily, and we like taking long, long walks. I'm looking to get residence somewhere outside the U.S. Any suggestions are appreciated, preferably in locations that are not associated too closely with the U.S. I'm not particularly looking for tons of U.S. expats either. A good sprinkling is enough. I hear some countries don't require an income submission either. Any help would be appreciated. Bob." Now, Bob, I don't want to be too hard on you, but I get an awful lot of emails like yours. People spelling out their own personal circumstances and asking me to pick the ideal spot for them in Latin America based on a single paragraph of their wants and desires. I can't do that. But what I can do is this. You just go to www.expatwisdom.com and hit on the phone consult link, and we can have a half hour, an hour of personal conversation. Go through your whole situation in detail. Then come up with some kind of plan. From what you say in your email, I can think of hundreds, maybe thousands of places that just might fit the bill. Bob, you know what? Every day I get requests from people asking me to pick the perfect spot for them. Well, it's not cut and dried. It takes some long thought, some conversation, and analysis. And that goes for all you listeners up there who've got particular issues like that and want me to help you make a plan. So then what are the possible steps to get there? First, maybe a call and a consult. Second, boots on the ground. Third, boots on the ground. Fourth, more boots on the ground. And of course, you really must consider coming down to one of my Expat Wisdom seminars. The way things are falling apart in the first world, I won't be giving these seminars forever. Okay, how about this email? "Don Johnny, your royal awesomeness." Ooh, you know how I hate the A word. He says, "Here's another gringo business idea to use, or not, as you say, at one of your seminars. I was in Montreal for the first time a couple weekends ago. It's a very cool city with a lot of young people, art, cafes, patios, etc. Here in Canada, the major cities, and maybe in the U.S. too, are starting to put some temporary patios out on the road just outside their businesses to take advantage of the great weather during our short summer season. Usually they're made of wood and look like decks, but this one, I've sent you a picture here, you'll see was a very cool and innovative idea made from an old shipping container painted with street art and nicely fitted inside. This could be used all year round in Latin America as a standalone pub or just to augment space from an existing bar, restaurant, cafe. A million and one ideas with shipping containers. Cuídate," which means take care, "Whitney from Cleveland, Canada." And he sent me a nice photo of this container on a Montreal sidewalk. But come on, something fishy here. Could there really be a Cleveland in Canada? Could be. There is actually a town called Chicago in Guatemala, believe it or not. Anyway, Whitney, I'm glad you brought up that shipping container idea. You know, at my last few Expat Wisdom seminars, I took my little group to see a very, very well-done modern home made out of two shipping containers. So I'm on top of that, all right, bro. And by the way, at one of my very first Expat Wisdom seminars, about 4.5 years ago now, As usual, a bunch of like-minded attendees started brainstorming, and they came up with a really great idea. Again, with the shipping containers. They said, look, there are so many steep mountains, valleys, and hills in Latin America where you can't build or farm conventionally because of the acute angles. That said, how about buying up a bunch of used shipping containers, they said. Then buy up a chunk of land on a side of a mountain overlooking a lake, whatever. Beautiful scenic view. In fact, they're practically giving away that kind of land because, like I said, you can't build or farm conventionally, just too steep. Well, these guys said, why don't you just take an excavator and start cutting out long, thin, flat spots on the side of a mountain and fit a bunch of shipping containers into those slats and create a hotel out of it. So with the land literally dirt cheap and the cost of used 40-foot shipping containers down here, $1,000 to $3,000 apiece. And by the way, some of my seminar creative folks have sketched out the plans for such a project already, so that each one of those containers would be a deluxe hotel room or suite. So yes, it seems like the do-it-yourselfers in the world have shipping containers on the brain. And that's probably a good thing. Yep, ideas for those things are popping up everywhere. In fact, I understand there's an architectural firm here in Latin America that will design a beautiful modern home complete made out of shipping containers. So, yet there's another reason to come down to one of my Expat Wisdom seminars. If you've got shipping container construction on the brain, come on down. I'll show you a project or two and introduce you to the right people. So, then you might ask, did that shipping container side of a mountain hotel scheme ever come to pass? Well, 4 years have passed and nothing yet. Not saying it won't get done. You see, it's just that when you have boots on the ground, and when you're with a lot of intelligent, like-minded expat wannabes like at the seminar, all kinds of wild and crazy ideas, even level and sober ideas, keep bubbling up. Seems like everybody's business brain is in high gear because by the end of the seminar, people are discussing and getting excited about all kinds of ideas. You look at these guys and gals and you can see the wheels are turning all the time. And though there may be dozens of business ideas, you can't do them all. Eventually, you have to narrow them down and focus on just one or two. So anyway, if you've got shipping container ideas, come on down. Yep, down here, there's an oversupply of the things, and yet no one seems to be using them. Not yet. Oh, and by the way, the modern container home that we'd visit at the seminar? Seems like everyone says, God, this is nice. I could live here. And here's a short email that made me laugh. In fact, I get a lot of emails on this. Hey, Johnny, love the show. Would you, by any chance, have any photos of expat Eddie's wife? We heard so much about her, and now could use a visual. Thanks, and keep up the great work. Scott from Sacramento. Well, Scott, like I said, I get a lot of people asking me about expat Eddie and his trials and tribulations and, of course, what he's going through with his fiancée. She's really not his wife yet, but the wedding is soon. It's going to be in San Salvador. That's the capital of El Salvador. Eddie's asked me to be in his wedding. I guess I'm going to be the MC, too. Yep, Eddie's fiancée is all right with that. She's not pissed off at me anymore. Remember, I mentioned on a past show that we had a falling out about a year ago. I knew she'd get over it, and quick, because one thing I've learned about Latins down here, they're very forgiving and much more so than many first world people I know. Yep, they can hold grudges, but not for long. In fact, you can see it in action all the time with couples who are romantically involved. The guy gets caught cheating or whatever, and soon enough, they're back together again. So even with a worst case scenario like that, the majority of couples get back together. Yet, believe it or not, it can get worse, much worse, and still, there's quick forgiveness. How about this little story that happened to a Latin friend of mine? And though it might sound kind of unusual, it's not. Here's what happened. This wealthy Latin friend of mine, he's about 45 years old. He's married to a 30-year-old Latin girl. They've been married 5 years and have two kids. They live in a nice upper-middle-class guarded subdivision. Anyway, one day, out in front of the entrance to their subdivision, a lady towing her young 10-year-old kid showed up at the guard station, demanding to see none other than my Latin friend. Now, obviously, she was a lower-middle-class lady, and the only lower-middle-class ladies that enter subdivisions like that are maids and cleaning ladies. She was none of those, yet demanded to see my buddy. So the guard called my friend's house, which is what they usually do when someone's at the gate. Now, my friend recognized the name from his distant past. He told me he turned red, took a deep breath, looked at his wife, who was standing right there, and said to the guard, go ahead, let her in. Turns out, it was his old girlfriend from about 10 or 12 years ago. Now note, my Latin buddy grew up a spoiled rich kid. Before he got married and settled down, he sowed his wild oats indiscriminately, as spoiled kids of the wealthy are wont to do. So now here's this upscale Latin family man in the advertising business, just like his dad. In fact, he inherited the business from him. Now he and his wife are standing on the porch, facing down a lower middle class lady who's towing a 10-year-old kid. And the first thing she says, "He's yours." Well, the kid looked just like my friend, so she was right. Now let me tell you, there are a lot of humble, calm, and collected Latin women. I've met a few myself. But I'd say the majority of the younger ones, especially 30 and under, under the right set of circumstances, can blow like an active volcano. Yep, I've seen many a Latin temper in action myself. So, when that lower-class lady and her kid walked up to the door, suddenly it turned into a zombie apocalypse movie. He said the two women went at it with shouts and obscenities that could be heard 6 blocks to the guard shack. So, faced with that, what do you think his upscale wife did? Well, he said the worst of it was that she made him sleep in the guest room for a week. So it did blow over, and fast. So what about the other woman with the kid? Well, she wanted money, of course. So then what's the backstory? Well, she was a waitress at a popular beach resort about 100 miles away. Typical tropical beachfront party place where a lot of young kids would go on weekends, and she happened to hook up with my buddy for a couple of days. And now, after 10 years, she finally located the guy with, guess what? Facebook! By the way, the kid was kind of dressed in rags and actually had fleas. So, in the end, my buddy paid the mother off, didn't take much, and took the kid in. Now, get this. Being that this is Latin America and it's so Christian, my Latin friend's immediate family, his parents, his sisters, his cousins, were overjoyed when they found out he had another kid. Nope, they weren't pissed off. They weren't embarrassed. They didn't scold him. There were no ruminations at all. They were just overjoyed. Another kid in the family. And even better, since it is a macho society, it was a boy. And as for his in-laws, his suegras, his pissed-off wife's immediate relatives, guess what? They were happy too. Another kid in the family. Didn't matter that it had nothing to do with their blood. So on a positive note, you have to hand it to these Latins. Down here, it's all about the kids. I suppose that's why even the poorest of Latin families are quite happy, because they actually have a family unit, a father and a mother living at home with the kids. Even in this macho society with all that male cheating going on, somehow in the vast majority of cases, the family unit is still intact. And believe it or not, nearly every night at dinner time, the whole family sits down, says their prayers, and eats together. When's the last time your family did that? So even kids of the poorest of the poor grow up with a mother and a father in the house. Whereas up in the first world, think about it. Last I heard, only about 10% of young poor kids in the ghetto have a mother and a father living under the same roof. And you know, it bothers me when I hear people talk about the so-called poor up in the States. Down here, that level of poverty would be considered middle or upper middle class. The so-called ghetto poor up in the States have TVs and cars and refrigerators and microwave ovens, even dishwashers. Not to mention healthcare, computers, smartphones, housing assistance, and dozens of other welfare programs I don't even want to know about. Just pisses me off. And what do the lower middle classes and poor down here have in common? Well, they live in tin shacks, sometimes with dirt floors, have no indoor plumbing, no safety net at all, and no hope of ever owning a car or even a motorcycle. In fact, my maintenance guy, whose family lives in one of those tin shacks, he told me not so long ago he hopes to have enough money someday to buy, get this, a nice bicycle. I guess that's what I'll get him for Christmas. Don't tell anybody, okay? But I digress. I know that email was about expat Eddie's girlfriend, right? Well, yes, she remains a beautiful, well-paid runway model. That is, she's in demand and does a lot of magazine shoots and fashion shows, and she's under contract to a top modeling agency. You see her on posters selling motor oil and Twinkies and stuff. And if you're in a car parts store or a mechanic shop, you might see her on one of their calendars, you know, with a hard hat holding a wrench and some battery terminals, dressed in a bikini, of course. So, yes, in Central America, she's considered a kind of a top model. And yes, she's under contract and she makes a whopping $1,000 a month. Yep, $1,000 a month. And she's told me that only about a dozen models in Salvador make that kind of dough. Even if you're a TV news presenter, a weather lady, or whatever, that's the top of the pay scale too, about $1,000 a month. Now remember, in El Salvador, the minimum wage is about $250 a month, though most unskilled workers like maids and gardeners and people working off the books will take a lot less than that. So anyway, I'm just pointing out the true disparities living down here. You see the same pretty faces showing up on billboards and in TV commercials and stuff, and you think, hey, that girl's got it made. She must really be in the chips. Well, you'd be wrong. The reality is, she's living large because those jobs come with a lot of perks, but she's making about half the U.S. minimum wage. And over the years, you know, I've talked to Eddie's girlfriend and a lot of her top model friends, and you'd be surprised. You know what their greatest fantasy is? To go to the U.S. and be a top model. And it's even a bigger surprise that they don't want to go up there for the money. It's just that the first world is the place to be, you know. Why do you think 10 million illegal Latins a year sneak through? And, you know, sitting down and talking to these ladies, you know what question I get all the time? Johnny, what are my chances if I go to the States that I can be a top model there, too? Now, I bet you didn't know that even the most beautiful and sexy Latin American models have an inferiority complex and think that first world gringas in the modeling business far outshine them. Why? Because they know damn well that every Latin American guy's fantasy is to hook up with a North American tall blonde gringa girl. And you know what? I always tell them the truth, and they never want to hear this. In looks and sexiness and style, you've got it made. As soon as you walk in there, all eyes are going to be on you, but you'll never make it. Why? Because you don't speak English. And even if you try, the average white bread, middle-class public have a kind of built-in prejudice to anyone that speaks English with a Spanish accent. Which is why almost all famous and popular newscasters speak like they came from Nebraska, like Johnny Carson. Sure, there are some exceptions, but they're very, very rare. For example, Sofia Vergara and Selma Hayek. And what did they have besides sexiness and good looks? Well, for starters, right place, right time, right cast, and a ton of luck. Yep, in a way, they won the lottery. And you know, when I've had that conversation with a model or two down here, including Eddie's fiancée, they think basic English is all they'll need to know, not realizing that as soon as they open their mouths, when out rolls that thick accent, as far as the media industry in the States, it's game over. Their opportunities, very narrow and limited. Just like Eddie and I will always have a bad English accent when we speak Spanish, Latins who learn English as adults will always speak it with a bad Spanish accent. In fact, the only Latin-born people I've ever met who speak English without an accent at all are the occasional children of the rich who've attended bilingual helicopter schools since they were 5 or 6 years old. Remember, at those schools, they have real first-world gringo teachers. That's why so many rich Latin kids speak English with no accent at all.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. He knows.